Greetings, Starfighter. You have been recruited by the Star League to listen to episode number 24 of the Retro Rewind podcast.
Retro Rewind podcast initialized. Mission identified. The Last Starfighter, 1984. Co-hosts online. Auditory analysis online. All systems nominal.
Welcome to the Retro Rewind podcast. This is the podcast where we look at movies and video games from 15 or more years ago and let you know whether they're still worth revisiting today. You can find the show notes for this episode at retrorewindpodcast.com/RRP24. There you could leave us a comment on what you thought of the show. You can vote in our poll for whether you thought The Last Starfighter was a classic or second class. And you can find links to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and more. My name is Francisco Ruiz. I am a dad, a designer, and a Death Blossom dispatcher.
All right.
And I'm joined, as always, by my good friend and co-host, Paul Powers. How are you doing today, Paul?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. As is our custom, my question for you this time is, would you rather be a starfighter pilot or an X-Wing fighter pilot?
Oh, good question.
I'd
have to go with the Starfighter because of the Death Blossom.
Yeah, even though it knocks out their power right away. All right.
Yeah, then you just have your navigator boosted up again, like, or your R2 unit. Now, if you have an R2 unit in the Starfighter, that would be awesome.
Then you got made. All right.
Yeah. No, wait. The Starfighter isn't the Starfighter is the person. What's the name of the ship?
It's just a Starfighter, I thought. No, that's not right. Oh my gosh, we are so unprepared. Oh no.
Oh.
Maybe our guest host knows. Would you actually introduce her?
Oh well, actually, yes. When we talked about doing this, reviewing this movie, I said to Francisco, I said, "Hey, you know who would be really, I think would be really good for this movie is actually my mom, who loved it when it first came out."
Your mother?
Yeah. So we talked with her and have invited her on the show today. So my mom is the guest.
Welcome, Deb. So glad you came on the show today. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Oh, totally.
It's a privilege.
Just so our listener can get to know you, what do you do and what is your favorite movie genre?
I teach at an international school in near Tokyo, Japan.
Wow, cool.
Yes, and my favorite genre is sci-fi, so... Ooh.
Well, then this is the right movie for you.
Yeah, this is the best movie.
Awesome.
Ever.
Maybe not ever, but it's up there.
Well, let's not give away the cat. I don't know.
Release the cat out of the bag.
Cat out of the bag, yeah.
Release the cats. Paul, will you please tell us? will you please tell us what our course is for this time?
Yes, everyone will be first served an appetizer with a bread roll and followed by a choice of spaghetti, pizza, or steak. And then we'll
Is
have
that a round table pizza.
Yes.
we'll
have our round table discussion on whether we think this movie is a classic and why. And then we're going to go to our new tube segment for dessert. And then we'll wrap it up with feedback and the bill.
Very good. Thank you, Paul. Alice, please just let us know whenever we get our...
Alert. Alert.
Reach the frontier.
Spoilers incoming. Engaging retro rewind reactor.
For every Earthling who's ever dreamed of adventures beyond the stars, comes the astonishing story of one who made it.
Alice?
Hi, Max.
Alex Rogan is The Last Starfighter. Rated PG. Now at select theaters. Check newspapers for locations and showtimes.
All right, The Last Starfighter came out on July 13th of 1984. It's rated PG and runs 101 minutes in the action-adventure family film genre. It was directed by Nick Castle and written by Jonathan R. Butel.
Butel.
Yes. Oh, do tell about Butel. No. It stars Lance Guest, who really didn't go on to do anything much else, unfortunately. Mary Stewart, who was the girlfriend, was also the girlfriend or love interest in Weekend at Bernie's. And also starred Robert Preston, the music man, in his last role. And then there
That's
was...
That's where I know him. Oh, my gosh. That was driving me crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
Professor Harold Hill and Music Man.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. This
role was written for him, literally.
we're talking about Centauri, right?
Yeah, he played Centauri. They wanted a used car salesman, but for the universe. Like, who's the best salesman we know? Professor Harold Hill.
Nice. So, please continue, Paul.
What?
Please continue.
Oh, okay. And it also starred some other people in the movie. nice. One of them was the little brother, Chris. The little brother Lewis was played by Chris Herbert, who was also starred in Fuzzbucket, for all those people who love that cult movie. Anyway.
Never heard of it.
I remember that.
Yeah. That has very few people know about it. And the people that know about it know about it.
Nice way of putting that.
Yeah.
Anything else about it, Paul?
It actually had Will Wheaton, but he wound up on the cutting room floor.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, that's my sister and I went to a Star Trek convention, and actually he was asked quite a lot about his Last Starfighter role. He's given billing in the credits, but we don't see him in the movie. And he was trying to, he decided to go to the studio and see if he couldn't get just his part in a picture so he could maybe show people at the convention or sell them. But actually, they threw it away. So we have nothing about that. So
sad.
But he said he was surprised how many people noticed his name and how many times he got asked that question.
That's cool. What about the budget versus the take for the movie?
Oh, the budget was about $15 million, and it made just over $6 million on its opening weekend and wound up making almost $30 million in the USA.
Oh, nice.
So they definitely made a profit.
Very good, Paul. Thank you so much.
I have a little known fact about...
Oh, yeah. Give us one little known fact.
One of the storyboard artists. One of the storyboard artists' name is Paul Power.
Yes. He doesn't have as many powers as I do.
Oh, because you're Paul Powers.
That's right.
Plural.
You can find me at pauljpowers.com.
Plugs aside... So we did a memory mind meld to give you our synopsis for The Last Starfighter. Unfortunately, due to psychic limitations via distance, Debs did not get in here. So this is just me and Paul's. But here are me and Paul's memories of The Last Starfighter. Alex Rogan, an early 20-something, works as a handyman at an RV park and is an ace pilot on the arcade game there, reaching the high score. Being recruited by Centauri, the alien maker of the game, Alex leaves Earth only to decide he doesn't want to fight and die in the war that goes back to Earth. But since he is a sitting duck on Earth from the aliens trying to get him, he goes back to Rylos to be a starfighter. Along with his alien co-pilot, Alex ends up being the only fighter left because the rest were killed, and uses a Super Saiyan spin attack, shooting lasers everywhere, defeating the Armada.
The end.
The end. And I think that is all completely accurate, so no Inception sound effect needed.
Oh.
Except for, well, they never gave his age, but he looked 20-something.
No, he was just graduated from high school. He's they're entering college. They're getting ready to enter college.
So he's more 18.
Well, no, he may have been held back, though.
That's true. Because he was helping his mom run the trailer park.
Exactly, yeah. That's it.
So it's good. Open for discussion. Good as safe, we Paul. Will settle this once and for all, not.
But speaking of discussion, let's go ahead and start with talking about, actually before.
Let's start having one.
But yeah. But one more thing before we discuss this movie.
Oh, good, good. You remembered.
What are quick fire predictions of whether we thought The Last Starfire was going to be a classic or second class? So like before we even watched it. Paul, how about you?
Classic.
And Deb?
Classic.
And I was kind of on the fence, but thinking probably classic.
I didn't know probably classic was an option.
Classic then, Paul.
Okay.
Thing for keeping on the straight and narrow. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to the things we loved and or just liked about this movie. Deb, why don't you kick us off with something you really loved about The Last Starfighter?
The thing that that really impressed me was in the beginning was how they filmed the trailer park in such a sleepy way, where you get the feeling right away everybody knows everybody in this trailer park.
Oh,
it's off the path. The dog is sleeping on his back. He's barely breathing.
They play telephone to get messages from one person to the other.
Yes. They have dialogue between the characters. They all know each other really well, and it shows that this is a place where nothing much happens, and you can tell Alex feels trapped there because. And this is one of the. I thought this was an excellent way to portray this, but after he's had to fix the lady's. Electric, he's sitting in his bedroom and he's looking at the space mobile that is hanging from his ceiling and he mimics the conversation that he's hearing outside the window.
Yeah, totally.
And it's like, oh my gosh, these same people have said these same things day in and day out, and he is just going to die if he stays there much longer.
See, and as an adult, I agree that's an excellent way to show that that's the same people having the same conversations all the time, and he knows it, and he's stuck. But as a kid, knowing that this is a sci-fi movie, and he had this after seeing the movie, but you know, when you watch it again, knowing that he had these amazing skills to beat the record, you know, to become a starfighter, I thought he had some special ability like to read minds. And so he could, he was able to know what other people are thinking, you know, as they're saying it. So that's I thought he had this special ability, like that would also help him, kind of like the Force, you know, guide the ship and to know what's going on.
That's funny. I totally did not infer that, or at least I don't remember inferring that as a kid, but I could totally see how watching this as a kid, you might think that, especially if you're acquainted with films like Star Wars or whatnot.
Yeah.
I didn't give much thought to how the setting was sort of, was a good place to show how Alex did feel stuck.
Something to add into that.
Yeah.
In the behind the scenes, the original script had him in suburbia.
Oh, really?
Like just in the suburbs, like in the housing area. But the director wanted it to feel more remote. He wanted the audience to feel like he was even more stuck. Mm. So they put it in a trailer park out in the middle of the nowhere, basically.
Nice. Yeah, and it. Actually, I think it was very effective because I did. It did seem to me like it was almost. I put down that is almost like Alex was very Luke Skywalker from New Hope when he's stuck on Tatooine. He wants to go
staring at the two suns.
Staring at the two suns. Yeah, it he very much felt like that.
Yeah. He just wants to go to
Tosche Station and get some power converters.
Yeah, to get the power converters. Yeah, I couldn't remember Tosche. Thank you.
I noticed, too, that he has posters of Paris and Hawaii hanging in his room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They do that close-up of the Hawaii poster, and you're like, where are we at the beach already? But go ahead.
He's a dreamer.
And, that's not typical posters that you see in a guy's room. You know, he has big dreams, just like
George Bailey.
Yes, just like George Bailey. He wants to go places and do things.
Yeah. George Bailey's from?
I don't know.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah. Oh, I've never seen It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, my goodness. That's probably the most tragic thing I've ever heard on this podcast.
Yes.
Well, for the listeners who enjoy the movie, know what we're talking about, then I guess it's okay. But moving on.
What was something you really liked about the movie, Paul?
I enjoyed the music, especially the theme music.
Yes,
I loved it too. It
totally made the ending. I mean, it was such a feel good ending, and then you have the music behind it, and I've been singing that song in my head all week.
Yeah, that's great. It's one of the things that it's identifiable. As soon as you hear that theme music, you know what movie that is.
I totally agree that it fits the movie really well. And the intro with the very Superman style.
At the beginning.
Titles. Yeah. I really enjoyed how it felt like they took a lot less time getting through the titles, which was nice. Though, I mean, you still have to sit through titles at the beginning. But yeah, that whole thing gelled for me. So I totally agree with you, Paul.
One thing that when I started watching the movie again, I didn't realize it because, you know, it's the credits and the movies starting and so forth. But they start with the opening shot of Rylos, the planet.
Yeah.
And then they go through all those planets down to Earth. And I was like, wow, I never noticed that before.
Yeah, I certainly never did, as seeing this as a kid.
I was wondering if that was new. Like, as this started, I was like, I don't remember this. I remember it starting with, you know, the dog asleep and then waking up.
Oh, interesting.
But then I was like,
where would they put the titles?
Because that's where the title and the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. It's weird.
I think that when we first watched it, we're not going to know that that's a planet Rylos because we don't know.
Yeah, it's just space.
So what's going on in our minds is, these are just planets and it's about space and so forth.
Right.
And another thing was that I put the subtitles on just so I wouldn't miss anything.
Oh, smart.
And actually, the opening dialogue, I thought, you know, it was with Otis saying it's going to be a sparkling day.
Yeah.
And that's so old fashioned that kind of adds to the ambiance too. But it says on the radio that there were, the police had there were reports of lights in the sky overhead.
I didn't notice that.
And I never noticed that before.
Oh. So like stars?
No, like UFO lights.
Oh.
It's a good way of seeding what's going to happen, I think.
In the sky.
Yeah.
But it was so, the dialogue was so underplayed that you wouldn't probably even notice it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Francisco, what's something that you liked?
Thank you for asking, Paul. Something that I really liked was, and I didn't realize this as a kid, was the voice for the arcade game, for the last Starfighter arcade game, or was it just called Starfighter? I think just Starfighter.
Reading Starfighter. So yeah, I think it's Starfighter.
Yeah. Was the voice of Centauri. I thought that was really cool how they sort of digitized it a bit, but I never picked up on that. But right away, for whatever reason, I could recognize that that's who that was. And speaking of that green, I posted on Facebook that we're going to be doing this, and one of the people that responded was Mike Roberts, and he said he thinks Last Starfighter is definitely a classic, and he quoted the line from the arcade game, "Green Starfighter, you have been recruited by the Star League to defend the frontier against Xur and the Kodan Armada."
Oh, yeah.
So thank you for sharing that memory, Mike. What did you guys think about the arcade game in general?
I thought it was cool. I mean, I thought it was, you know, it was realistic, very, what most kids played.
Mm-hmm.
But what I liked was that he's so familiar with the game, he can have a conversation with Otis and Maggie and not even realize he's hit 900,000 points by the time he gets to a certain point.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even key into that, but you're right. He is very like in tune to just playing the game, that he doesn't really care about the score. That's interesting.
Yeah. I saw this movie on Blu-ray, and in my opinion, it's an excellent transfer. Mm-hmm. I never noticed the crispness of the graphics on the computer game before. Mm-hmm. Thought they were very well done from a production point.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful to see someone playing a video game in a movie that actually looked like a contemporary video game with contemporary sound effects.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but contemporary for that time, I would say.
Well, yeah. Of course, it can't be. They're not going to change the effects and the sounds as they move. You know, George Lucas isn't making this movie. So during the time, definitely well done. As a lot of times you see these movies where and off to the back end, you see a kid playing a video game and it's kind of like
a baby's toy.
Yeah. Blocks. And it's playing the sound effects of Pac-Man when they're not playing the Pac-Man game,
that
because
that's
annoying. The only game they could get the sounds to.
Or Space Invaders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and in fact, this was such a well-developed game for the movie that I was talking about this with my wife. She asked, well, did they have the video game at that time to help promote the movie?
Yeah.
And they would have made a fortune if they did.
Oh, totally, yeah.
I was about to say, this game later came out on the Nintendo Entertainment System, the 8-bit version. It totally stunk.
I was going to say, it kind of looked nearly as good.
No, it was totally different graphics based on a totally different... It was completely different, and it was nothing like that. If they made it like this, it probably would have done a lot better.
Well, here's the thing. I would venture to say that graphic technology for games was not anywhere near this level. I think they had to render this like they couldn't have made a game with that graphic quality. They could have only done movie renders.
Well, as I watched the specials behind after the movie, they did say that this was the first movie to do photorealistic computer graphics or integrated CGI, where the effects are supposed to represent real-world objects.
Mm-hmm.
And that's instead of using models and miniatures like they normally would do.
Right. Okay.
And I kind of disagreed with it because the movie Tron, which came out 2 years before, I think, had computer-generated images. But the landscape and everything that it used wasn't supposed to be real world. It was supposed to be computer world.
Oh.
So I think that's where they get away with saying that.
Technicality.
Yeah.
Well, but I think their point was that they were able to do CGI instead in the place of using models and miniatures. Now
like the car and the spaceship, space station and the spaceship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that is where the groundbreaking was done. There was a lot of CGI going on before that, but I think this is the first time it was photorealistic.
Yeah. And photorealistic back then.
Yes.
Right.
Good addendum. Yes.
So the fact that they were able to make a believable movie without the models and miniatures was amazing.
Yeah. And they certainly pressed hard to make that happen.
Yeah. And I'm going to have to bring up the graphics in the next section, but,
What you didn't like.
Yes.
Oh, come on. You can't base it on, the today's.
I have to base it on at the time. I have a good argument. I would say I have a good argument if I do say so myself. But let's move on to other things we loved about this movie. Let's talk about Centauri. Was Centauri something that you liked, either of you liked about this movie?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I love the fact that they got Robert Preston in the role because was amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody could have done a better job.
That's true.
The thing that kind of freaked me out was I'm like, so Alex gets in this car with a guy, and then he takes off into space, and Alex isn't. I mean, I'd be really freaked out.
Yeah,
and
then when totally.
He puts his eyes out. That I was like, okay, I'd have fainted dead away by that time.
Which shows that he probably has the wherewithal to stay focused in maybe a battle sequence where there's all kinds of things happening and surprises.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good point.
Well, he definitely had the, because I noticed this throughout the movie, you know, he's on another planet and facing all these aliens and stuff, and he's going like, huh. he's kind of taking it all in and you know, analyzing it and stuff in his brain. You could see he's thinking about this, but he's not freaked out. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And just to go off that a little bit, I thought Maggie, his girlfriend, when she found out from the beta unit that all this stuff was going on, she was very like accepting right away of it, which is very atypical, I would say, for movies. Typically, characters take a lot of convincing to.
I think she could tell there's something different about him.
That's true, but I mean, still, I think they could have decided to go in the direction of no, really, convince me more, and I'm glad that they didn't.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree too. And plus, she, one of the reasons I really love this movie is because it mirrors my husband's in my life. Not that we went into outer space or anything, but
that we know of.
Yes. But we met in high school, and after graduating a few years later, when he asked me to marry him, we were going to be stationed in Italy, and you know, that's like on the other end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I could really relate to, you know, you have to leave family and friends and everything you love and go to this strange place. And I think Maggie was able to believe it because she knows Alex's character. She knows that she could see him doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that adds to the believability factor.
Yeah. That's a good point. Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool. Are you sure they didn't, script this based on your guys' life?
I don't think so. This was 10 years after we got married.
Oh. Well, exactly.
We'll take the fifth on that.
Yeah, okay.
Go
ahead, Paul.
Okay. We've gone to different... I guess I'll save it for when we talk about the special effects later. I have a point to add. But what did you think of Centauri, Francisco?
I was going to say, I love some of the elements of his character and some of the things he said that I wouldn't have expected from a movie like this. When they're, Alex wanted Centauri to bring him back because he didn't want to be a starfighter. Wham, wham. And they're stuck on the road because his car breaks down or something like that, which I found comical that this spaceship car breaks down on
a desert highway. Yeah,
I thought it was funny too.
Yeah, I like that Alex was like, I can't do this. I forget what he says. I'm only like a kid.
He says, I'm a kid from a trailer park.
Yes, yes. And Centauri's line is, if that's all you think, then that's all you'll ever be.
Darn it! Why'd you bring that up? Because the reason why I say that is because I put that line or a similar line in my book that I'm writing.
Oh, really?
There's the same concept.
Oh, well, it's really good. It's
that's one of the things that makes this movie so wonderful is because it's a universal thing. This is not a new thought.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's a very common self-limiting belief that you're only as good as where you came from. And that Centauri challenges him and calls him up to something more, I think is really, was really compelling that he said that.
And I think that Centauri was familiar enough with Earth and its customs that he really was able to pull off being an alien and yet being relatable enough to human beings that he knew their motivations and their feelings and so forth.
I never thought about it that way, but yeah, he is very much,
That's part of being a con man, though.
Yeah, you're right. That's what makes it so good.
Well, in this movie, though, I would say he's not a con man. And
a salesman.
He's a salesman. And I actually like that he says, I think when he's dying, like he got shot and they get back to Rylos, I like that he said that he really just wanted to do a lot of good. But that he wanted to do a lot of good and still get paid for it and still get rich. Yeah. I think that's nice. I think often you get people that are really rich pegged into the hole of, well, they just don't care about anyone, or you have to be poor if you really want to care about do any good. And I don't think that's true at all. At least I don't believe that. I believe that you want to do things for the benefit of other people, and that's actually the best way to make money is by bringing value to others. Sorry, that's a little soapbox for me, but
here. All right, move on.
Moving on. Deb, what's something else you really loved about the movie?
I know this has been done a lot, but it wasn't done a lot at the time, was that they spoke the alien language on the planet.
That was nice.
I was like, oh my gosh, that is so cool. Of course, I love languages, so that would push my button. But I thought, okay, now this is realistic. You can't go on to another planet and they're speaking English.
Right.
And of course, they have the universal translator thing that Star Trek uses. But
they did a good job of implementing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Though I do want to say, this wasn't so much something I hated, but this is the perfect time to bring it up. When they get back at the very end, how come all the people at the trailer park can understand
Grig?
It seems like they wouldn't be able to without a translator.
Well, maybe it's not only you hear it, but it also, it's like
a transmitter.
Yeah, exactly. It's alien technology.
Right. Okay. I'll let that slide then.
We are almost at that technology with the iPhones and everything
that's
now.
Sure. Yeah. Good point.
So, and this is far more advanced than that.
All right. All right. Again, I'll let it slide. But
after the movie was first out, a lot of times in our family, we would be Kita, Kita.
That's awesome. Wow. Paul, what was something else you really liked about The Last Starfighter?
Going back to the 80s, it's nice to see aliens that look real and not CG.
Okay, go ahead and finish.
That's one of the things that I liked. I enjoyed the different designs, very creative.
Oh, yes, I agree with that.
You could look like you could actually touch and poke the aliens rather than some of these 3D digital ones that look like they're just, you know, special effects. And they even used it to the advantage, they were being under attack and they're like all the starfighters to their ships. And that one alien pops up with the big eyes. Yeah, it's fun. It's like a little funny moment. Yeah,
totally. So. What did you think about the alien characters, Deb?
I thought they were pretty creative. The The assassin. He was so ugly.
Oh, with the eyes on the side of the head, that kind of thing.
The hammerhead guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
Zandozan.
That's Zandozan. Yeah, and I think it's funny when Alex is trying to help Otis, and he asks Maggie, "Do you smell something?"
Yeah. Like a z.
Never mind.
Very cool.
Yeah, and I and the beta unit, the whole idea of the beta unit is very fascinating.
Yeah, that's really clever. Let's talk about that. I do want to say that I agree with you, Paul, about the effects, the aliens looking really good. As far as, I keep forgetting his name. Is it Grig, Krig, or Rig?
Grig. It's Grig. Like Greg with an I in Thank the middle you. Instead of an E.
For Griggs. And for the Zandozans. All the other ones, I felt like they did not come off very well.
I thought Griggs was amazing. Yes. It reminded me of Enemy Mine.
Yes, yes. He looked like he was really this mole person.
Enemy Mine, yeah.
Don't worry, listener. Enemy Mine is on the list for movies we'll cover in the future.
That's a good one, too.
Back to Last Starfire, though. So the beta unit, not really a beta, more a clone, but what did you think of him, Paul?
He was kind of goopy for a robot.
That is an understatement.
But I watched or was listening to some of the behind the scenes, and I thought it was amazing because there's some. For some reason, the beta unit looks a little bit different.
Yeah. Oh, totally. At first, when you first see him, I'm like, is that the same actor? I'm not so sure.
Yeah. But, and I was like, what? Does he have a twin? But it's close enough, you know. So it turns out that it is him.
Uh-huh.
I
have no idea. Tell me why.
Okay.
I know why, because I watched it too.
Yeah. The beta unit. Now tell me if I'm wrong, Mom, okay?
Okay.
The beta unit scenes were filmed after the principal shooting.
Okay. Well, they filmed like one or two and they liked how well they worked, so they filmed more.
Okay. What happened is that the main actor had another gig in which he had to shave his head for.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they went back to do the shootings of the beta unit, he was wearing a wig.
Oh.
So it looked very similar, but a little bit slightly off. So it really worked well.
That's awesome. Wow. Yeah. How serendipitous.
Yeah.
Very cool. Speaking of the icky factor, we got... Again, on Facebook, if you want to follow our Facebook page, it's retrorewindpodcast.com/ That's not it at all. Facebook.com/ retrorewindpodcast. Or you could friend me or Paul, and we usually post these questions. But I want to say Ryan Jackson posted, "Oh, wow, I totally forgot about this movie. I loved it growing up. From what I remember, which is very little, I'd call it a classic. Probably the most vivid memory would be the alien mutating, which freaked me out as a kid." I totally agree. That was like the scariest part of the whole movie for me, seeing the beta unit still forming into Alex.
Yeah.
And then Josh Powers, to make this Three Powers podcast, he says, "I totally had to close my eyes during the beta unit changing under the bed scene. I also had to close my eyes during the head drill scene and some other parts. The theme is still one of the best in cinema, in my opinion. And there's some great memorable lines. You hear that, Slimes? I'm famous."
Yeah.
Lewis,
he was one of the things I really liked. I really liked the younger brother. I mean, he had a bit of a potty mouth, but I loved his enthusiasm.
Yeah, even as an adult, I didn't like, that was one of the things I wrote.
That you didn't like?
That I didn't like. I mean, I think it was well done, but I was like, oh my gosh, I hate to see this scene come up.
Don't worry, Deb.
It was so creepy.
Wait, the baby. I thought you were talking about the brother you didn't like.
No. I'm sorry, the beta unit changing into the...
Yeah.
Into the house.
Yeah, he's been up all night moaning.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll have to wait to give my opinion about the brother till later.
Oh.
I thought the brother was great.
You thought the brother to Lewis was great. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I just to wrap up the beta unit, I thought he was very comical. It was almost like he was the, I'm not sure.
Comic relief?
Yeah. It was kind of like he was the comic relief, and he played it very, very deadpan, which was funny to me. Let's go ahead and wrap up our love section with one more thing from you guys. Let's start with you, Paul.
Can I interrupt just 1 minute? I mean, yes. we cannot talk about this movie without talking about the beta unit taking his head off. I mean, we cannot talk about this movie without saying something about that.
Okay.
Save
Don't
the
lose
podcast,
your head over
Dev.
The situation,
nice. Go ahead, Dev.
I thought that was hysterical because the first there's a lot of tension and you hear something outside the window you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's something horrible. And then it's just a moth and he has to fix his head and he takes his head off. I know it's very cheesy and very corny, but when he sees that one of the assassins probably flying down to the planet and he shakes his head and he puts his fingers on his nose to shake his head.
Yeah.
That was so funny.
No, and I thought that was so well done. I had totally forgotten about that scene, and I thought they pulled it off so well.
Yeah.
So thank you for bringing
that up.
I think
in the behind the scenes, they asked them specifically, what made you think of him shaking his head by turning his nose like that? And I think if I remember correctly, it's something that they came up with on the spot while they were filming.
And that's such a natural thing that he would have done if his head was attached, which made it perfect.
Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you so much for bringing that up, Deb. That was definitely critical to talking about The Last Starfighter.
Yeah. Go back to sleep, Lewis. You're having a terrible nightmare.
But before we get to the terrible parts of this movie, again, what's one more thing that each of us liked? Paul?
I'll let my mom have it.
Oh, all right. Go for it, Deb.
Well, I like the fact that that the whole trailer park is behind Alex. You know, I mean, they come to watch him win the Starfighter game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Afterwards, all their comments are so positive. That boy's going to go places. He's such a smart boy, you know, very, very positive. And where they all come at the end, where they're, you know, they're all together, it's like they're all behind them. They're all one cohesive unit. I just really appreciated that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that Valerie and I were talking about, my wife, and she mentioned, and I agree with her, it's like, why would he want to leave from that? It's a very supportive community. I mean, the further we get, move along through time and with the advancement of technology, we are becoming more and more isolated to ourselves. We don't talk to our neighbors as much. Mm-hmm. And here you have a community where everybody knows everybody. They're all talking and communicating. They're supporting one another, helping each other out. And it seems like a place where it's kind of like Cheers, where everyone knows your name, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
And so Valerie was saying, I totally see why Maggie doesn't want to leave that. You know, it may not be as glamorous as some other sites, but you have an environment there which is very positive, which I think you see less and less in society today.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to agree that it is very positive, but I also can see the point of feeling like you're not growing at all. You're just sort of stuck.
Now, if you were called to do more, then yes, it's frustrating. Mm-hmm. But if you're not, then
They're really there. He saw no future there. I mean, you know, he's just going to be the handyman at the trailer park. And he really wants to do something important with his life. And when a really touching moment was when they had that victory celebration, the whole planet came out and they're cheering because he saved their planet. Yeah. And I think that's his, they want him to stay, and he's thinking, wow, here's the future I've been looking for. It's way different than I thought, but I can do something important.
I think that's the main reason why he didn't freak out in Centauri's car, is that this is an avenue that'll get me away from the trailer park. I don't know where it leads. Maybe he's going to kill me in a shack somewhere, but it definitely has possibilities. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I definitely want to say that, just to cap off the conversation, that I really did get drawn in to when, Alex is playing the game and Maggie says, look, you have the high score, and the whole community comes out and is like just cheering him on. That part was just so amazing to me, that they all got on board that, and then the rest of the movie happened. Speaking of that, let's go ahead and get into the things that we didn't like about the Starfire, or maybe even hated. So sort of finishing out my thought there. I felt like that was the most gripping scene for me. And then I felt like something happened with the pacing of the movie. It had some peaks, but it seemed to like have a lot of back and forth with like Alex going, then deciding to go back, and going and deciding to go back. And then
it only happened once.
Nah.
Explain, sir.
All right. So he goes to Rylos, hears that they're in a war, decides to go back. That's one trip.
Okay.
They go back to Rylos.
Yes.
And he gets suited up and they get in the asteroid. And then as he's having all this trouble doing the targeting and stuff, he has doubts and doesn't really want to do it. Then they get into the meteor and he doesn't want to.
Well, he was tricked by...
I was not done yet.
Okay.
And then he gets in the meteor, doesn't really want to pull the trigger, is like having second thoughts about it, and then decides, I can't fight in this war. So it's not that he goes back and forth necessarily, but internally he goes back and forth a lot.
Oh, okay. That's different. You said he goes back and forth. I literally took you literally.
Me too.
I apologize for being so...
I'm sorry, ambiguous. Listeners. I didn't literally take him.
Yeah, get your literals right.
Yeah, all right. But I took you literally. No, I mean...
No, you didn't.
You know what I mean.
I know what you mean, yes.
Physically.
That's what makes the movie believable. This young guy...
Yeah, it's his internal struggles, which most movies fail at.
I think it's good to have it one time. I don't think you need it continually like he did.
Well, first he gets kidnapped and taken there, and it's showing everything. And then he's like, what? War? No, thanks. And then he decides to go, right?
And that would have been perfect. I think that should have just been that. But then he has all this other internal struggle.
But I think it shows more realistically. He's like, I'm ready to fight. I'm going to fight for Rylos. I'm going to be a starfighter. And he goes and finds, he says, how many starfighters are left? One. One! Now he's not only fighting, he's the only one fighting.
Yeah, then he's like, whoa, I think I got in over my head.
Yeah. For him to suddenly say, oh yeah, let's go, I can take this whole
Well, okay.
Greetings, starfighter.
Greetings. Okay, I you know what? I'd have to agree with you guys that it does make the movie more realistic.
And it brings it up to edge to like, oh, he's the last one. And that's why the movie's called that.
Yeah. Spoiler alert movie title. But, all right. So I'm essentially bogarting this and going to go into another point that I didn't like. But the...
Where did Bogart come up with that phrase?
I've heard that phrase. I don't know if I'm using it right, but right. That's beside the point.
I've never heard of it, so.
Yeah, okay, never mind.
I'm way to Bogart that one.
We'll have to look it up.
Exactly. While I agree that it makes sense to make it more realistic, but the big problem with that is that so much of the movie didn't have realism to it. I almost, like, Deb, you brought this point up that it was so cool, or maybe it was Paul, I'm sorry, but that it was so cool that they used 3D effects, they didn't use any models and all that. And I think it was cool to see, like, the cutting edge of what 3D animation could be at that point, but nowadays, it definitely looks dated. And, excuse me.
Yeah, that is, I agree with you there, that And I noticed this when I watch Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
If I watch Star Trek The Next Generation or Deep Space Nine or Voyager, I cannot go and watch Star Trek the original series
mm-hmm.
after that.
Yeah.
Because it seems too, it seems not good.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem very real. It seems very, a stage and a model.
I think that's true of anything of special effects, though.
But yeah.
Kind of effects.
I would say, like, movies like Star Wars, I feel like they still hold up.
No, they don't.
Anything that was made before is going to lose something in the translation looking at it 30 years from now.
Right. Sure.
Okay. But let me say
let
this.
Let me backpedal.
Yeah, let me backpedal a bit. One of the things that didn't look realistic, even if it were the graphics were still the same, there was really no sense of speed for a lot of the effects. Like,
what?
Like, it seemed like the missiles were always really slow, and the Gunstar, which the starfighter's
ship. Yeah, I think it was called a Gunstar.
Yeah, I looked it up.
Thank you.
The Gunstar always seemed to turn really slow, and
that's based on jet propulsions. Jets and airplanes turn really slow.
Not in space.
Yeah.
No, there's
space shuttles can't do a 360. Well, maybe they can, but I don't think so.
I think they could, because you don't have the same air forces working against you, and so all you need to. You just need a thruster pointed in the right direction to spin.
Yeah,
you.
But they don't have them pointed in the right direction.
But this is an alien spacecraft. It should have that type of maneuverability.
Okay, you know,
especially
what?
For doing something like Death Blossom. That was totally fast. If it could do something like that, it should able to maneuver well.
That was a new prototype.
Okay, and that they were flying the new prototype.
Yeah, no, that feature on the prototype was a prototype. So they didn't even know if it worked. So now that they know it works, they can use it more.
Okay. And this is 1984. And
is it 1984 or
94? This is Rylos in 1984.
Yeah.
Who knows what they're, you know, this is, when I watched it, I mm-hmm. didn't feel anything like that, but you apparently, when did you feel that? As a child when you first saw it or
no,
now?
No, this was as an adult. I remembered it being a lot fancier or shinier as a kid. So that certainly probably plays into it. And then another thing was the whole, the scale of things, like the
ship
Kodan ship. Yeah. Either the moon was really tiny or that ship was really huge. Okay, my last point of contention as far as the space effects go is they kept saying...
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry. I know. I'm ranting.
Because you're not a child and you can't suspend reality anymore.
Yes.
Go ahead.
They keep saying, oh, he's like 5 clicks away. But they show the ships right on top of each other
Yeah, they're much. Five clicks.
Five clicks. A click is a kilometer.
On Earth, this is Rylos.
Oh my God. Why would they say clicks then?
Because that's how it's translated in their English translator.
Oh, that's actually a really good point. Okay, I'll buy that. I'll buy that. All right.
You know, it's very difficult to accept future technology that was done 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And we've come so far now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's very hard to look at it through. I thought the computer graphics were a little bit cartoony, mm-hmm. but I thought, well, so what?
Right. Well, here's the thing though. I think this is my conclusion. We were talking about how what sort of started this whole conversation off was the realism of Alex and how he is this real character, but that is completely contrasted against this unreal setting, in my opinion.
Francisco,
that's me.
That was a movie of the time, so of course all the special effects are going to look like that.
But they're making it out to be real, a real place and everything, and they...
Sorry, it's not a documentary.
What? This isn't Galaxy Quest?
No.
Another histories. Awesome movie.
Yes, agreed.
But I will say something about the special effects. Are you saying you don't like the special effects?
I'm done with the effects, but you can finish it.
Okay, I want to finish on this note. One of the cool trivia points is that this movie and 2 years earlier, Tron, mm-hmm. were both submitted to the Academy for Best Special Effects, but denied because what? They thought computer graphics were cheating.
Oh, at my the time. Gosh. Well, now isn't there a category for visual effects and special effects?
I don't know. I think there's a distinction. But you can't win an Academy Award now without computer graphics.
Right, yeah.
In that.
There's the irony there.
Yeah, right. So that's a fun little trivia note.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. I had no idea.
Yeah.
All right. Now that I've said my piece on all of that, Deb, what was something you didn't like about the movie, or was there anything?
Well, I mostly loved everything. The things I didn't like, the beta unit's transformation.
Yeah.
The other thing
was very well done though, as far as special effects.
Very well done. Yeah. Yeah.
For today's standard.
Oh yes. I would totally agree with the beta effects being very, very cool and very realistic. Yeah.
Even Alex taking his head off, or the beta unit mm-hmm. taking his head off, that still plays well too.
Yeah, totally.
I didn't like the master spy getting his brain fried. I mean, even though that was,
I was surprised to see something like that in a PG movie. Though yeah, I suppose Temple of Doom was PG.
It could have gotten a lot worse, but it was bad enough. It was like it was, mm-hmm. but in the. But that being said, they broke new ground in putting the bad guy, I forgot his name now.
Zor,
yeah, how could I forget that? Zor's head in as a holographic image over the whole over that whole meeting. The bonus information said that was groundbreaking. They weren't sure they were going to be able to do that, but that was the part that I didn't care for.
Yeah, but Disney did that decades before in The Haunted House with the holographic ghosts, and that looks even more real than the hologram. Anyway,
on. But I never really got with that. Why would he not just stick around and spy on them the whole time? If you could just do that.
I don't understand what Francisco is talking about. But
you mean Zor sticking around and spying?
Yeah, just having his head there. Because he looks at where the starfires are, and he's like, these starfires. So he can obviously see everything.
Yeah,
and he's talking with his dad. So why not just like, oh, I'll just superimpose myself anywhere I see fit and see what your plans are.
Or make his head invisible but still see.
Yeah, so why not do that?
How do you know he's not?
Because they didn't know Alex was back until the last second.
Because his head wasn't looking there.
I guess it's not that the part of Sauron.
The space station was blown up by then. So was his holographic transmitter. One of the things that I didn't like is basically a plot point. Like you said in our memory synopsis, you have like, oh, he's this last starfighter going against the whole armada. So how does he defeat them? Well, basically there's a mutiny and he doesn't have to.
Right.
It's kind of anticlimactic.
Wait, what? I was following you.
He shoots a couple ships.
Yeah, okay.
Which I gotta say, going back to the things that I like, the Death Blossom.
Yes, so cool.
This is one of the things that is, it's a special weapon that, you know, in different movies and games, there's like, oh, there's a special weapon.
Yeah.
This is one of those that is talked about and there's a little bit of hype behind, and this one actually pays off in a major way. Oh, it's so totally. Awesome.
Yes, yes, yes. I'd agree.
So after he shoots a lot of the ships around him with that, and so how does he defeat the main one? You know, the main attacking arm, let's just say, okay, the main enemy only has one command ship.
Yeah.
That the problem number one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then, so what happens? Oh, there's a mutiny, and they kick the guy out, and he escapes, and so there's a opening for a sequel there.
Yes.
But, and then they're caught in a track. Their systems are down, and they're caught in the gravitational pull of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So the last starfighter didn't really do much as far as resolution is concerned, which is, I guess at the end is like, hey, we need you here because Zor is still out there. But it seems like, you know, at the beginning, I'm sorry, this is a long roundabout way, but at the beginning where we're talking about the memory synopsis, where it's like, hey, they're going and he's the last one. So how does he defeat them? He doesn't. There's a mutiny.
I'm still not tracking with this mutiny. You mean the Kodans mutiny against Zur?
Yes. The I don't know what they are, but those aliens that are dressed in
the Kodans. The Kodans, yeah.
Yeah, the Kodans are like, we how long do we have to put up with him? You know, it seems that if if Rylos had just waited about two more days, their problems would have been solved anyway, because they Zor was removed from their hierarchy anyway.
But then the Kodans would have attacked Rylos. That's what they wanted.
Yeah, the whole thing was that they were able to protect themselves with this kind of
frontier force field shield thing.
Defense yeah. shield. And only Zor had the command codes to get that shield down.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they attacked, but so that got rid of all the starfighters, and now they're coming to, you know, take over the planet. Well, with most of their command or the major command killed, it's going to take the Kodans a while to regroup their forces, which is why they ask Alex to stay. It's they won the battle, but they haven't won the war.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm getting at. I'm disappointed that it seemed that this was just, in the grand scheme of things, he just won just a little battle, not the war. And that I was disappointed.
But I don't think it was a little battle. I think it was a major battle. Because
well, it was in the fact that it woke Rylos up. And they're like, hey, we need more of a defense army rather than just a frontier.
Yeah, right.
Well, and not only that, but if they needed Zur to help them infiltrate, so they were able to do that. But I think it's going to be very difficult now because they needed a traitor to get them in to that, to be that close. And now that quite a bit of their forces have taken a big blow, it's going to be a while till they can regroup and try to get back at them.
Oh, don't worry. It'll all be figured out by the time we reach the frontier.
Starfighter 2, the search for more money.
Speaking of Starfighter 2, I was really hoping that there would be one with the little brother Lewis, who's like, oh, wow, at the end. Like, I was like, this is cool. I'm going to work hard and you know, try to beat the game and become a Starfighter like my brother.
Since you mentioned it,
yes,
Lewis, I don't know. I was really bothered by him, actually. I thought he was actually a completely unnecessary character. He didn't add really anything to it for me. I feel like
diarrhea.
Yeah. I don't know if he is just there to sort of be a window into the world for kids of that age or younger, but I didn't like him. And
to answer your question.
What?
He is a window to, he is a window into the world for the kids, and he's comic relief.
I didn't find him funny, but okay. And so
I did, and okay.
I this is a very personal thing, but I really felt it was sad that he was hiding Playboys, and that was just an okay thing. There wasn't anything wrong with
it's
that.
Not an okay thing. That's why his older brother threatened to tell mom about it.
Yeah, but he didn't get in trouble for it.
No, there's a lot of things he didn't get in trouble for.
Well, that's a good point.
He's one of those. I mean, and this helped with the realism of the movie, I think. Mm-hmm. When I watched it at the time, I'm of your opinion, Francisco. I didn't have much use for him, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But as I watched it this time, and now that I'm a teacher, it's just the way kids are.
Yeah. Especially with the latchkey kid whose mom is always away working, you know.
That's actually a good point. I didn't think about that component of it, that he is probably on his own a lot.
Right.
So that makes sense. But
And not only that, I got the impression that maybe the father was dead. They weren't a divorced family, but I guess because of the
picture.
Yeah. The picture shows the dad, and I think he has a cane. I thought, oh, the father's died and the mother's trying to make a living. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think it's so realistic, and this has to do with the trailer park community as well. In the beginning, he's shooting his gun with these rubber tipped arrows or whatever.
Yeah.
And nobody's yelling at him and screaming, Lewis, what are you doing? They're just going, ooh.
Yeah.
They're just taking it as a matter of course because they know that's
he's
just
a kid.
He's a kid. Mm-hmm. He's playing around. And his brother takes care of him. You can, you know, you kind of get that sense of that Alex has a lot to, you know, he's fixing people's stuff at the trailer park. He's taking care of his mom. He reminded me so much of Paul.
Aww. Wait, Lewis reminded you of Paul or Alex reminded you of Paul?
Alex reminded me of Paul. Aww. That's the way Paul would be like.
Have you defeated the Codans, Paul?
Not yet. It's on my list of things to do after I fix the electric generator.
Nice. Okay, well, I think that's a good case, Deb and Paul. I do want to say, though, that Ryan Jackson did post, sort of in my camp, I guess, on Facebook, he said, oh, I also remember my mom not wanting me to watch this movie because of the younger kid. I think he was the main character's younger brother. Yep, he was. And his attitude really irritated her being his mom, I believe. So...
Yeah, so, it really irritated me as well.
Yeah.
But looking back on it, you know, it's
how kids are.
Yeah, it's how kids are, especially when you have a latchkey situation.
Yeah, yeah.
But the best, I think one of the best parts of the movie for me was when he goes, wow, at the end.
Yeah, that is a nice moment. I'll agree.
All right.
Any other things you didn't like about the movie, Paul?
None that come to mind right now.
Okay. How about you, Deb?
That I didn't like?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
No, that just the gory parts and the bad language of Lewis. Those are the only parts I didn't like.
Let's move on to our moment of truth. Alice, do you have a firing solution for us? Wait, you don't?
Wait for it.
Why don't you have one? Oh, you do have one. Oh, good.
Firing solution complete. Rating salvo at the ready. On your mark.
Nice stall.
Thanks. All right, guys. Let's let our listener know whether we think The Last Starfighter is a classic or second class. And let's also say how we rate classics or second class. Deb, let's start with you.
I definitely want to call this movie a classic. And two criteria is it stands the test of time and it uses universal themes like reach for your dreams and try to make your life better than your present circumstances. Because it has these universal themes in it, I think it will always, graphics aside, I think it will always be a classic.
Paul?
So Paul, what did you think about
it? Yeah, exactly. Paul, classic or second class?
I think this is, it's a classic. Of course, it's a classic. I would definitely recommend this to anyone who hasn't seen it. And for someone who has seen it, but it's been a while, mm-hmm. I definitely recommend it as a rewatch. It's nice. Very uplifting, especially the endings feel good, interesting themes. Yes, the story, the plot line. Yeah, it's all good.
You don't sound like it's
I know,
all good.
So non-committal. The themes apply. Yeah, it's all fine. Go watch it again. It's yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Paul. Thank you.
Sorry. This movie is so cool. If you haven't seen it, go out right now and go put it on and see it. Don't finish this podcast. Go get it.
Wow.
Is that better?
Sure.
All right. Sure, whatever. There's listeners, there is a long moment of silence here because Francisco is sitting and waiting and seething and hoping that his fellow podcasters would ask him, "Hey, Francisco, what by chance do you have an opinion on this movie we have been discussing the past hour and such?"
You know, it warms my heart that you would want my opinion. Yes, I do have one.
Oh, do expand on that.
We do tell.
All righty. So I'll just go ahead and say it. I'm going to have to rate Last Starfighter as second class.
What?
No!
let me dissect it a little bit.
Okay, please do.
Most of the characters were enjoyable. There are certainly elements like the Death Blossom and the arcade game. There are lots of Centauri was a character, but there are certainly moments that were enjoyable. But I think on the whole, the movie, like I sort of alluded to at the beginning, it gripped me really strong at the beginning and then just sort of faded as the rest of the movie went. It didn't seem to be paced very well. The longer the movie went on, the less well paced it seemed to me. And so essentially for me, it amounted to a movie that was less than the sum of its parts. Like, if they had rearranged the parts in a different way almost, it would have been so much more of an enjoyable movie, at least for me. I wouldn't keep my daughter Sophia from watching this, but it's not a movie I would say, we got to watch this.
Really?
Yeah, especially over... So if I was going to like pick this versus Star Wars or this versus... other sci-fi movie that I really like, I can't think of right now. I would pick.
No, it's not. It's not this versus one or the other movie. It's an also. You would also want them to watch it.
I would. I wouldn't say go out of my way to say, oh, let's watch this movie. It just wouldn't be one of those that I'd say. And I think. Oh, also, Paul, I did not fall asleep during the movie. Oh, so
okay,
that's
I was wondering.
No. And guys,
and this is the man who doesn't like It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, he's never seen, well, yeah, that's true.
Believe me, I am actually really glad that we're considering that because of your votes. It's a classic because I struggled with this so much. But it's one of those things where I kept having to try to convince myself of why this is a classic, like trying to say, but Francisco, it can be a classic. I mean, look at this. And if I'm fine with myself that much to go against what my gut is saying, I feel like that's just me trying to make excuses for what I really believe to be.
Far be it from me than to try to persuade you. But daughter wants to sit down and watch a movie. Mm-hmm. And you would recommend that she would watch Labyrinth before she watched this. Because Labyrinth is a classic this isn't.
No, no. I would recommend Fly the Navigator before this.
No, no, no. Labyrinth, you rated a classic.
And I read Fly the Navigator classic.
No. All right, fine. She watched Fly the Navigator. What else do you want to watch? Let's watch Labyrinth before Last Starfighter. True or false?
If age is appropriate,
yes.
Then yes, I'd pick Labyrinth mainly because I enjoyed it. Labyrinth more. I found it.
I know that's what enjoyed. That's all I wanted to know.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Aren't you glad I had you watch Last Starfighter, Paul?
Oh yeah. Okay, so maybe we're teaming up against Francisco here.
Yeah, that's
so the that's listeners okay, should also yes, please vote.
That's yes. Please vote on our poll. Yes. Go to the bottom of the post right next to where you see, as you just heard, the Retro Rewind podcast considers The Last Starfighter a disputed classic. Certainly, it's worth revisiting again if you've seen it or watching it for the first time if you haven't, unless you're completely aligned with the way how I've rated movies, then you probably don't want to pick this up. But
okay, so even if you have seen it, you wouldn't recommend, you'd say, oh, go watch Fly the Navigator instead?
Wait, if you have or haven't seen it?
If you have seen it.
If I have seen it, I'd say, yeah, go watch Fly the Navigator before this.
Okay.
If you haven't seen it, I'd say, yeah, I mean, it might be worth watching. It depends on how much they really enjoy sci-fi.
Okay.
But, all right, I think that's all. Oh yeah, vote in our poll at the bottom of the post when this goes up, retrorewindpodcast.com/RRP24. Let's move on to our new tube segment.
New tube systems engaged.
Why are you so loud, Alice? All right. This is
turn
the part
our volume down
of the show. Yeah, I know. Where we talk about new contemporary things that we've been watching or playing or reading these days. Deb, let's open with you. What's something that's new on your tube?
Well, I love reading. So I'm always reading something. I mean, even though I only read a limited Japanese, I even read stuff I don't know what I'm reading on the trains. But I'm a new genre. I didn't really know the name of it. It's called cozy mysteries. Have you heard of this before?
No, that's new to me.
Wait, cozy. Is this like a whodunit but nobody goes anywhere?
Nice.
No, cozy mysteries are mystery stories that have very little sex and violence. They're set in small towns with a hero or heroine. Yeah, very similar. Very little bad language, but the hero or heroine, mostly heroines, they have an average job, and it's how they solve different mysteries that they come across in their life. And like one of the authors I'm reading is Sheila Connolly, and she wrote the Orchard Mystery series, and it's all about this lady who lost her job, and her mother has a home in this small town that they've owned for years, and she wants her to renovate it and sell it. Well, she ends up living there and actually working in the orchard that is on the property. And somebody gets killed there, and then there you go. It's a whole story. But it's in series. It's about the same people every book.
Cool. All right. Thank you for suggesting that, Deb. And links to the Orchard series, is that what it was called?
Yes, or the Orchard Mystery Series.
Orchard Mystery Series. Okay, we'll have links to that in the show notes. Paul, what is something that's new on your tube?
Something that isn't relatively new. I've been following it for a while. It's actually a comic strip you can find online. It's very specific. For some reason, I just really enjoy this comic. It's not funny. It's very, well,
dour.
I don't know why I like it. I just do. It's for people who like the DC superheroes like Batman, Superman, Flash, Wonder Woman. There is a comic strip called Jail 8 comic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the JLA is mm-hmm. the Justice League of America is Batman, Superman, that superhero group,
mm-hmm.
but it's JL 8 and it's all the kids. It's the superheroes as kids if they were 8 years old.
I've heard of this.
Oh, that's
I've
cool.
actually heard of this. Yeah.
Yeah. So they have a Facebook page, and the main site is the Tumblr page, which is jl8comic.tumblr.com. And it's a fun, and I grew up reading the DC comics, and it's a fun way of looking at them, the superheroes and even the villains as they're in elementary school and their interactions with each other. So if you like that sort of thing, I'd recommend checking them out.
Very cool. Thanks for sharing that, Paul.
Yeah. So, Francisco, what is new on your tube?
What's new on my tube? The movie Oblivion, the recent Tom Cruise movie.
Oh, yes. That's all like it was filmed by Apple.
It was? Because
it's all white. No, it looks like a... Because it has very white-based theme, you know, throughout.
I didn't really notice that. Okay. Huh. But I recommend seeing it. I think it's an engaging sci-fi movie on the whole.
But not a classic.
Well, I can't fully say classic or second class of a movie that recent, but...
But you recommend it. Okay.
Yeah, I'd recommend seeing it.
I liked it to watch once, but I don't know if I would watch it again.
Yeah, exactly. I probably wouldn't watch it again.
Yeah, there were some scenes I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, I was like...
Because I have... Yeah.
I'm sorry I described it for you guys like you hadn't seen it, but...
No, for the listeners who haven't.
Yeah, well, I guess. So, yeah, I was just doing it for them, so...
Well, isn't that the whole reason why we're doing this podcast to begin with?
Ah, you know what? And it's also good when we hear back from the listener. So let's go to our feedback section.
Woohoo!
ComSat Online. Receiving incoming transmission.
All right, guys, we had a few feedback items, not sound feedbacks, Paul. Comments on a few of our past episodes. Oh, dang it. on episode 23, which is our Tremors episode, retrorewindpodcast.com/RRP23, RJ wrote, "Hey guys, just finished listening to the podcast on Tremors. Tons of fun. My favorite quote from the podcast was, everything's better with bacon." Yeah, I definitely enjoyed that. I think Tim Ipok, who's listens to the show, wrote that one in. "I had hoped someone would have mentioned the similarity between the graboids and the giant sandworms from Dune, but I guess I can't have everything. Anyways, thanks, guys."
Yeah, that's a movie I haven't seen.
Really? I've only seen like the last 20 minutes of it, so.
Well, and you've seen the first 20.
Well, go ahead,
Paul. I was about to say, and you've only seen the first 20 minutes of It's a Wonderful Life. So
does it end in giant sandworms? Save Christmas?
And now, now you're mixing up your movies. But someone should make that.
Then for episode 13 on Labyrinth, RJ said, "Yes, love this movie. The idea, the puppeteering, the creativity was amazing. Most of what I didn't like, you guys mentioned, David Bowie's music in particular, but the biggest thing that annoyed me was his pants for very inappropriate reasons."
I didn't really
actually
notice.
You know what, Christy, I watched the movie, I remember watching that with Christy, and she commented on his piece, his let's say. Yes, his pants. And then we had one email, which you can email us at feedback@retrorewindpodcast.com. And Ryan wrote us, "Are you opposed to doing movies rated R?" And I wrote back to him saying, "No, we're not, as long as it fits our criteria of 15 years or older, we saw it in our youth, etc." So if you have suggestions of rated R movies, shoot them our way. It's possible we may not get to them because I believe Paul was not allowed to watch many rated R movies when he was growing up. Is that correct,
Deb? You got that right.
Thanks a lot, Deb. You've crippled our podcast. No, just kidding.
Well, when he was 18, he could watch whatever he wanted after that. Then he was on his own.
All right. So That's totally fair.
If he wanted, I'll tell you something. My mother, when I was growing up, did not let me watch Sonny
and Cher?
No. And the Sundance Kid. What is it?
Butch Cassidy.
Yes, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid because of all the violence. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I have not watched it.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
Yeah, I just
her
don't
mother
have
still won't let her watch it.
Mom's been gone a while now, so
she keeps tabs on you.
She's a floating head, but invisible, looking at you.
What?
Like Zer.
Yes, that's creepy.
So Paul, when I'm gone, don't worry, I won't keep tabs on you that closely.
Thanks.
How kind of you. All right, Paul, if people would like to get in touch with us, where can they go to do that?
You want to start that over?
No.
Okay. They can contact us by yelling really loud if we're in the near vicinity. can email us by emailing feedback@retrorewindpodcast.com, or they can like our Facebook page.
Anyway, we're also on G+. You can find us there, Twitter. And Paul, if someone would like to get in contact with you, where could they go?
I'm on Twitter at Paul J. Powers, and I'm other social media and email you can find on my website at pauljpowers.com.
Awesome. And is there anything you wanted to promote this week?
Yeah, if you go to the retrorewindpodcast.com page and you click on the Avengers banner, you can order as iRiffs.
Yes.
So I'd promote that. Awesome. iRiffs are fun. If you don't know what they are, look them up.
Definitely suggest that. Deb, if anyone would like to get in touch with you, how would you like to be contacted? Do you have a Twitter, or would you want them to just email the show or anything like that?
Yeah, if they could email the show, that would be great.
Okay, yeah, just send that to us and we'll get it to Deb. Just say who it's for.
Feedback at retrorewindpodcast.com.
Thank you. Nice. And you can find me on Twitter. I'm at FXRUIZX. And again, email the show as another way to get in touch with me.
Because one X is never enough.
Exactly. Oh, and I also want to promote, haven't done this in a while, the Upper Memory Block podcast. So let me play that now.
Like you did before? I mean, you promoted it before, but...
Well, but now I'm going to actually play the promo.
Oh, okay, cool.
Do you remember playing great PC games like King's Quest, Command & Conquer, and X-Wing? Do you remember spending hours tweaking your config sys and autoexec bat files to eke out just one more K of conventional memory? If you do, then you may be interested in my show, The Upper Memory Block. Every 2 weeks, we talk in-depth about a game, game series, company, or technology from the DOS and pre-Windows XP gaming era. We'll discuss the story, gameplay, and technology of the games of the time. But more importantly, we're going to focus on what made each game special, interesting stories from their development, and how they shaped what PC gaming is today. If you remember gaming in the late 80s and early 90s, or you're interested in finding out more about it, come join your host Joe in the Upper Memory Block. That's the Upper Memory Block podcast at umbcast.com, or find it on iTunes.
Thank you. I want to thank you, Deb, for being on the show. It's awesome to have you.
It was great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Paul, as always, for lending your voice to the podcast.
You're welcome.
And most of all, thank you, listener, for downloading our episodes, for Ryan on our Facebook wall, or our
we're tuning us out for most of the episode, but actually listening to this part really thank you.
Exactly. Yeah, we really appreciate you. And if you'd like to support the show, two ways to do that, which are best: just tell another friend, check out the Retro Rewind podcast, maybe your favorite episode, or leave us a rating and review on iTunes, which would be amazing. You could give us any star rating you feel is honest, but we'd love a rating review as well.
What if they honestly think it's 10 stars, but they can't rate it that way? They're only limited to 5.
Then they can write it. This is a 10-star podcast, but I could only rate it 5.
Oh, this is a negative 3-star podcast, but wow. I could only rate it 0.
Way to bring us down.
Well, you said you want him to be honest.
I do. So those would be the two ways to support the show.
Tell your friends.
Yeah. With that, listener, like a Pokemon, we'll catch you later on the next episode of the Retro Rewind podcast.
Did we just die?
Apparently we
You played
died.
The wrong ending.